haunches, eating again, wordlessly, with belt knives, until the bearded one rose and stood spraddle-legged before the fire and closed the other two in a foul, white plume of smoke, out of and through which they fought suddenly, and unannounced and mute, and it suddenly ceased, picking up their ragged duffel and moving west along the river once again. She shook him awake into the quiet darkness.
"Hush," she said. "Quit hollering."
He sat up.
"What?"
he said.
"What?"
She shook him awake from dark to dark, delivered out of the clamorous rabble under a black sun and into a night more dolorous, sitting upright and cursing beneath his breath in the bed he shared with her and the nameless weight in her belly. Awake from this dream. There was a prophet standing in the square with arms upheld in exhortation to the beggared multitude gathered there. A delegation of human ruin who attended him with blind eyes upturned and puckered stumps and leprous sores. The sun hung on the cusp of eclipse, and the prophet spoke to them. This hour the sun would darken, and all these souls would be cured of their afflictions before it appeared again. And the dreamer himself was caught up among the supplicants, and when they had been blessed and the sun begun to blacken, he did push forward and hold up his hand and call out.
"Me," he cried. "Can I be cured?"
The prophet looked down as if surprised to see him there amidst such pariahs. The sun paused. He said,
"Yes, I think perhaps you will be cured."
Then the sun buckled and the dark fell like a shout. The last wire-thin rim was crept away. They waited. Nothing moved. They waited a long time and it grew chill. Above them hung the stars of another season. There began a restlessness and a muttering. The sun did not return. It grew cold and more black and silent, and some began to cry out and some despaired, but the sun did not return. Now the dreamer grew fearful. Voices were being raised against him. He was caught up in the crowd, and the stink of their rags filled his nostrils. They grew seething and more mutinous, and he tried to hide among them, but they knew him even in that pit of hopeless dark, and fell upon him with howls of outrage. In the morning, he heard the tinker's shoddy carillon long through the woods, and he rose and stumbled to the door to see what new evil this might be. There had been no one to the cabin for some 3 months, he himself coming harried and manic into the glade to wave away whoever by chance or obscure purpose should visit so remote a place. He himself slogging through the new spring mud 4 miles to the store and back once a week for such few things as they needed, cornmeal and coal oil, and candy for her. When the tinker came rattling his cart in drunken chivalry through the clearing, he was there with wild arms like one fending back a curse. The tinker looked up, a small gnomic creature, wreathed in a morass of grizzled hair, watching him with bland gray eyes.
"Sickness here," he called. "Got sickness."
The tinker took a few last short steps, backing into the wagon's momentum like a balky mule, halted and lowered the shafts to the ground, and passed one ragged blue coat sleeve across his brow.
"What kind?"
he said. The man walked toward him, still waving one hand, his peg brogans noiseless in the thatch of pine needles, and the only sound in the clearing, the tinker's pails penduluming with a tin clatter to gradual rest.
"Old fevery chill of some kind," the man said. "Best not to come round."
The tinker cocked his head.